It's time to get your nerd on. This is CosmicPotatoNetwork.com.
In a world without a single unified voice, humanity has been left searching for answers to the unknown. Now, one podcast has the power to change that and to spread its voice across the earth for all mankind to hear. Welcome to Cosmic Potato, the Super Fan Talk Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to Cosmic Potato, the Super Fan Talk Podcast. My name is Sean Ray, and I wanted to jump in here at the beginning of the episode to let you know that what you're about to hear is a little bit different from our usual format, because on June 25th through the 28th, which as I'm recording this, today is June 28th, our network, CosmicPotatoNetwork.com, hosted a virtual convention that we called At Home Con. We put it together because most of the conventions that we go to were being canceled due to the pandemic caused by COVID-19, and we really missed getting together and doing all the panels and the games that we do every year. So with At Home Con, we invited con panelists and podcasters to come over to our group page and host live streams that people could participate in via chat. And over the next few weeks, we're going to be bringing you the audio of some of those streams as episodes of our podcast. I left everything the way that it was live. And at the end of the show, you're going to hear us talk about the schedule of some of the panels that are coming up. And I left it that way because if you go to the At Home Con group page on Facebook, you can still watch those live streams. That's where they live, and they're not going to be going anywhere anytime soon. This particular panel is a discussion that I've really wanted to have for a while. I wanted to talk about the Watchmen TV series from HBO. So Rick, John, Scott, and myself, along with Boz from The Little Pot of Horrors and Matthew Carroll from the Stranded Panda Network, we all got together and we chatted about what we loved about this series. I'm going to warn you, there are spoilers, so if you haven't watched the series yet, then you need to go and check it out. And as I'm recording this, which I said is June 28th, 2020, that series is available for you to watch for free on Hulu and HBO Max. So go and check that out while it's still available for free. So enjoy this discussion and be sure to come back over the next several weeks to hear more of what we had available during At Home Con. Go to the group, join the group, and watch those streams. Maybe next year you'll be able to join us. All right, that's enough talking. Thanks for being here. I'm going to go ahead and play the theme music and get the show started.
We interrupt this program to annoy you and make things generally irritating.
Welcome to Cosmic Potato, the Super Fan Talk Podcast.
Easy peasy lemon squeezy.
We've got you covered with everything from Marvel to Star Wars.
I'm glad you asked that because I wanted to take this time to explain my evil plan.
Classic films, trivia games, and beyond.
Go to the coast, we get together, have a few laughs.
Now, on with the show.
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
We have to wait for Boz because he's in the future. He's in the future.
Then shouldn't he be waiting for us?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. We'll be there in 6 hours. Or 5 hours for most of you guys.
Can you convert that to metric?
No. I was promised there would be no math.
It's 15 megajoules, I believe.
7 ARDs.
21 gigawatts.
Rick, were you laughing at the ARDs, or was that unrelated?
No, I was laughing at you. Yeah, your joke, yeah. And then at the 1.21 gigawatts.
Are you drinking Diet Mountain Dew?
Yes.
Have I rubbed off on you that much?
No, it was...
It was on sale.
No, when I first actually started trying to lose weight late last year, my office, the break room, has a drink machine, and this is one of the offerings. And I'd always avoided it because I was like, diet milk, there's no way. But it was a good combination of zero calories and the caffeine I needed to get me through the day. So now I'm addicted. Thanks.
Yeah. And the taste does kind of grow on you. People say it's gross when the first
you can pass through solid objects.
Yeah. And glow in the dark.
I actually don't drink it that much. Coke Zero is my go-to.
I'm drinking regular Mountain Dew tonight. Just because.
Y'all ever have Jolt Cola?
To stay conscious.
I've had it. Yeah.
Jolt Cola? Jolt.
When I was a kid.
Yeah. Pretty sure that's banned in D.C.
My mom, I bought it one time when I was a kid because my mom didn't know what it was.
My big best memory, well, best is probably not the right term, but I left a set model. We used, you know, for scenic design, sometimes you build scale models of the set you're designing. And yeah. I had left one for the last minute. Literally, it was due the next morning. And I hadn't even done half of it. And so I, you know, went out to the garage at like 6 o'clock with a 2-liter bottle of Jolt Cola and an X-Acto knife. And what I turned in the next day was technically a set model.
Yeah.
It was appalling. And I literally was like,
yeah. And you were awake for the next 4 days.
Yeah. You could see time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could hear colors.
Yeah. Yeah. Double the sugar and twice the caffeine, I think, is their slogan.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
I'm the guy that can fall asleep halfway through a can of Rockstar or any other given energy drink.
I'm the same way.
I can't drink energy drinks. I just don't like the taste. I have not tasted a single energy drink that I thought was good.
I tasted a Red Bull once, and I can still feel it in my mouth.
Yeah.
I can deal with the taste. It's too, like, there's no, that I've discovered anyway. Caffeine basically has no effect on me anymore. It's like, I'm the same way. I can, like, it's complete. I'm immune to it. But the energy drinks just make me jittery. So there's got to be some, I'm sure there's some special herbal blend of roots and nuts and teas and berries that's the perfect level for me, but I have yet to discover it or want to put any effort to do so.
You're not going to find that in a Red Bull, that's for sure.
For me, it's Adderall. I just started that a few months ago, and that has been good.
I don't know if they even still make it anymore, but Vivarin got me through both college and Air Force tech school.
Yeah,
how I still have kidneys, I don't know.
You don't know if they still make pills made of pure caffeine? Yeah, I think those are around somewhere.
Oh, yeah, you can buy caffeine pills. When I used to do that that job at the traffic management center, I kept a bottle of caffeine pills in my bag.
So
they used to call it no-dos.
Yeah, no-dos.
Yeah. Yeah, there's all sorts of truck stop brand name.
It's like the very special episode of Saved by the Bell where Jesse got, it was supposed to be their drug episode, but she was just taking caffeine pills. That's as hardcore as Saved by the Bell could get, was caffeine pills.
That's so silly.
Yeah.
Family so Ties, they took it all the way on Family Ties where Michael J. Fox was getting addicted to diet pills, which is speed.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And then he slept through the test and then he couldn't find the door and it was heart-wrenching.
Hey, Sean, are you seeing this on the home con? Chris posted a suggestion.
Oh, yeah, I saw it. Yeah, I'll probably do that tonight when we get done. Okay. It's not something I even thought about doing.
Jesus.
How is Chris not on any of these shows yet, or did he do one and I missed it?
He was working today.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's actually Friday.
Yeah, today's Friday.
Forgetting.
So, but he's doing a Quantum Leap panel tomorrow.
That's right.
So.
He's one of those folks that actually.
Yeah, he works in the medical field. He.
Goes to show that my devotion is stronger than Chris's because I took yesterday and today off for this event.
I took today off, not yesterday.
What's up, Buzz?
Hi. Am I the only one who didn't do like a costume change between sets?
I'm wearing the same shirt I've been wearing all day.
even though I had the most time.
No, I've had the most time. I've actually been off for the last 4 hours. So,
my plan was 10. To change my shirt between every show, and then
there was
I ended up being on.
I had one where I didn't get the chance to change my shirt between shows. So there are two panels today where back to back where I wore the same shirt. Otherwise, I've changed the shirt and the backdrop every single time.
That's commitment.
Yeah, I have seen your backdrops changing.
Mm-hmm.
and I was gonna watch the Masters of the Universe Jeopardy game while I was cooking dinner, and then the phone and my battery died. So I was like, well, I guess I'll just have to watch it later. But
that was good. I just watched that.
I'm looking forward to looking back on the stuff I missed. I napped. I'm not gonna lie.
I think so did I.
I did my show, and then I went to sleep, and then I woke up, and my wife's like, "Did you order the pizza?" I'm like, "What?" So I had to make a run and get the pizza.
Yeah, and
social distancing pizza retrieval, and then my nephew-in-law, had an inexplicably late birthday party celebration. Like from like 9 to 10 or 9 to 10.
Yeah, like what? 200 family members within like 5 miles of you, it seems.
He's from the South. That's...
They're not within close of me. It was a Zoom birthday party.
They're
in Atlanta.
I've got 1,000 family members that live close to me. I don't see very many of them very often.
Technically, I was still at the birthday party. When I caught the tail end of the sci-fi court, which is great. I love that show. I'm looking forward to watching that one.
Yeah, we got to get Joe to come back on Cosmic Potato and do that again sometime soon. Yeah.
There was a dude named Gary Mitchell on the panel.
He's been on the show before. He's been on our show.
I thought so. I said I've met you before, and he's like, no, I was never on your show.
Yeah. Yeah. we weren't doing video back then, but yeah, he's been on the Star Trek show at least twice.
That's quite
forgettable, Rick.
it's a curse. I blend in.
Yeah, Brandon says he would have family parties monthly with about 100 people. Yeah. We do that.
I like your red acoustic foam, by the way.
It's a bit Heath Robinson, isn't it? I need to do something a bit more pretty for tomorrow. Now, that's Dave, by the way, behind me. He has my back, so it's a long story. It involves lockdown and cosplay, but I won't go into it now.
And you're building it up now, so you have to tell the story. Because you were fine with these guys my back, but now you're.
Chekhov's gun there.
Exactly.
Well, okay then. Basically, just before lockdown, I discovered my new sport, and I managed to go to one training session, and then lockdown happened. So to sort of cope with my new excitement with it and channel the energy properly, I built Dave. So Dave is for me to smack the living hell out of with a lightsaber. He's made of old sofa foam and packing tape, and he's tied to a clothes rack, which I bought to use to mount my soundproofing on. So now it's a dual-purpose soundproof rack and lightsaber target. That then became I need a costume if I'm going to play with lightsabers. So I thought I'd armor, paint my fencing mask, all that kind of stuff. And then I realized, actually, I want a display costume and I want a combat costume. So I have two complete outfits that I have created spending hours over this lockdown.
Yeah.
And show me the pictures. Do you have the picture on your computer? You can share the screen. It's fucking awesome.
Do you know what? I haven't on this computer. Annoyingly.
Are we live?
Should we're live.
Not be swearing? I'm sorry.
That was a long story, and it was completely worth it.
Nobody's going to show up and arrest you for swearing.
It's at home con late night.
Yeah, no one told me about the swearing bit.
I always try to behave myself on Sean's shows because I'm a absolute potty mouth on my own shows, but I tried to,
You've met me, yeah? We had an arrangement earlier on Captain Game Show.
Yeah.
And John handled it brilliantly because I warned him, you know, I'm a potty mouth. And he's like, yeah, okay. But we're going to have a swear jar. You swear, I give a point to your enemies. It's like, oh, it's like that, is it?
Yeah.
It applies to everyone. It wasn't specifically targeted to him.
Everybody thinks that I care about swearing a lot more than I really do. So,
yeah.
Oh,
and well, technically, the profanity that you used is profanity that I allow on the show. But somebody called it. I was like, well, yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah, and sorry for leaving you in the lurch, John.
No, it's fine.
It was unavoidable.
Honestly, it was 40-60 that I would be on this panel tonight and not just stay asleep. So I'm right there with you. I totally understand.
All right. So tonight we're talking about Watchmen. I'm calling this panel We Watch the Watchmen. Woo! And we're going to spend the next hour or so talking about the critically acclaimed HBO series Watchmen. Before we do, we'll all introduce ourselves. So I'm Sean Ray. I am the host of Cosmic Potato, the Super Fan Talk podcast, and Star Trek All Access. And we'll go in clockwise order. Excuse me. So Matt.
me. Okay. I'm Matthew Carroll. I'm from the Stranded Panda Network. And I have a podcast called Who Watched the Watchmen? Very similarly titled to what we're doing right now.
So we are the answer.
Yeah, we watched the Watchmen. So we finally answered after months of that question being our name. And I also do music. I have a geek band called The Garage that does geek themed music. So yeah, that's me.
All right, Scott.
I am Scott Madison. I'm the host of the Prime Direction, which is another show right here on the Cosmic Potato Network. I appear somewhat frequently on other shows on this network, and this is my 7th podcasting panel today.
Woo. Yeah, it's my 5th. All right. Rick?
This is my 5th, too. Should have been a lot more, but that's a long, unpleasant story. Hi, I'm Rick. I am the host of Starbase 66 and Open the Iris and various other shows over at the Infinite Diversity Network, where you can find us at starbasecommand.net. I also am part of Cosmic Potato, which is a joy and an honor, and I'm off on Captain Game Show, and I'm here to talk about The Watchmen.
All right, John?
John Irons, host of Captain Game Show, co-host of various other shows on Cosmic Potato. It's pretty much all you need to know.
He's eternally sleepy.
Well, just when I'm broadcasting. Because podcasting is what I fit into my own time after all my other obligations. But yeah, that's fair. I'm also... consequently, not by design, but often the diversification aspect of the podcast. So you're welcome.
And he has a lovely singing voice.
Thank you.
True. Yeah. All right, Boz.
I can't screen share because I'd have to reboot Chrome, so I'm going to do this.
Oh yeah,
nice.
That's sweet. That's the outfit. Yeah. Okay.
Wow.
So yeah, other than spending too much time playing with EVA foam, glue, and paint. I occasionally, about 3 times a year currently, do a podcast called The Little Pod of Horrors. I keep promising it will get more current, but yeah, that's it at the moment. I do that on the Legion Podcasting Network, which is a more horror-leaning network. I also do a little show on there occasionally with my good buddy Court from the Cinema PsyOps podcast. Some people might know that. We do a show called Bullshit Artists as well. So there you go.
Okay. Okay, so IMDb says, Watchmen is a 2019 HBO series set in an alternate history where masked vigilantes are treated as outlaws. Watchmen embraces the nostalgia of the original groundbreaking graphic novel of the same name while attempting to break new ground of its own. And it's a sequel to the comic, not the film. Have all of you guys read, did you guys ever read the original comic?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Back in the day, I read it, yeah.
Okay. How did y'all feel about the Zack Snyder film?
Long and boring, but a faithful adaptation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was fine. I get why they switched the.
Do we want big to spoil scheme, that?
The big scheme, I guess we'll call it.
Oh yeah, there are spoilers. We're spoiling the show. We watched The Watchmen, and we're going to talk about it. So,
but are we going to spoil the comic?
No, I don't need to spoil it. I mean, if you should know what I'm talking about. It is a major change from from what they were planning, from what the big plan was in the comic to what they.
I don't really think we could talk about the series without spoiling the comic.
Yeah, the show spoils the comic, so
yeah.
Just a bit.
Yeah. Okay, just wanted to be.
So it's not even a complaint, but that's probably most disappointing is that they didn't go with it. But I also get why. It's a lot easier to explain and probably cheaper to produce.
Absolutely.
But I thought the film was fine.
Yeah.
I thought Rorschach was especially spot on perfect. That's another cosplay I made a few years ago. my absolute favorite line in the comic, which was perfectly done in the movie as well, which is, oh yeah, whatever happened to that guy? Oh, he tried that on Rorschach and he dropped him down an elevator shaft. Still one of my favorite lines in anything. So I love that character.
One of my favorite lines in any film is also a Rorschach line. You're all trapped in here with me.
Yes.
Yeah. Great. I'm not, yeah. I'm not in here with you. You're in here with me. Yeah,
Jackie,
say that a lot at work. Yeah,
Jackie Earle Haley did a great job in the movie. Did an absolutely wonderful performance. Overall, the film has a very high production value. It's very slick. That's something that Zack Snyder is very good at, is making a film that looks really nice, and it is by and large nicely faithful to the original comic, except for the parts where it's really, really, really not.
Yeah. When I heard that they were going to make a series of Watchmen, at first I was like, because I thought that they were just going to redo. It was going to be a retelling of the same story,
Which I would have been okay with, because if they had done a miniseries adaptation of the comic that took the changes that were made in the movie and pulled them back to line up with the comic to make it an even more comic accurate adaptation into live action, I still would have been okay with that. It would have been a little tired, but fine.
Yeah, but I feel like if they had done it as a series, they would have kept all that pirate ship stuff in that's the only part. That's the only part of the comic that I didn't really like. that whole aspect of it just kind of. When I go back and read it now, I skip over all that stuff.
I may have scan read those parts as well, actually.
Yeah.
But you keep those parts in, and then you find a way to adapt the excerpts from the prose that they put between every issue. You find a way to adapt that into live action. You film that too. If you're going to make a series adaptation of the adaptation, not a sequel, but an adaptation of the original comic, you go all the way. You put everything on the screen.
Did any of you
Isn't
guys
there
read
an extra on the DVD of the Black Schooner? What is that whole thing called?
The Black Freighter.
It's like a motion comic, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Depending on what DVD set that you get, they've either worked the scenes from that animation back into the movie, or that motion comic can be purchased separately on its own disc.
Yeah. Go ahead, Matt. You were going to say something.
Oh, I was going to say, did any of you watching the show that we're talking about here, did any of you read the PDpedia?
Mm-mm. Not only found out about that today.
A little bit, but not a lot of it.
I highly recommend it. After every episode of the show, they released, just like they do in the book, in the comic, how they have like two or three pages of prose at the end. They released, it's the files of Agent Petey investigating the stuff that is currently going on, and it goes deeper into the world. You kind of get an answer to who Lube Man is. You get like all these like weird connections that I really enjoyed.
Oh yeah,
I felt like that was the only kind of untouched thread. I feel free to spoil that because I would like to know.
Do you guys want to know? It's the very last thing you find out.
I'm fine with it.
Spoiler alert for the PDpedia.
Well, no, Rick absolutely loves it when you have to read something to support a TV show or movie. So, go ahead.
Right. Well, I thought it worked amazingly on its own, but if you read it, there's all this cool stuff in there. But the last thing you find out, everything is from Petey's perspective. It's like things collected by Petey. And the very last piece of paper in the PDpedia is a folder that is about Agent Petey and how he's on the run because they discovered a costume and a bunch of lubricant in his office. So it turns out Petey is Lube Man.
Oh.
Right, now, refresh my memory, because it's been a couple of months since I watched. Who is Lube Man?
Just one scene.
Yeah.
But she turns and sees him like just all in black.
Silver.
Sorry. Yeah. And she starts to chase him and he runs. and he lubes himself up.
Oh, right. And he goes down the sewer.
He slides down the sewer.
And they never explain it at all. It's just like just a one off scene that.
Vigilante? Is he a villain? Is it just his kink?
You can tell by his writings that he's fascinated with costume heroes, so I guess he's trying to come up with his own persona, but like they don't go into it at all. It's just the very last thing you see is or the very last thing you read is that they discovered his identity as Lube Man. It's real crazy.
Nice.
So Lindelof, he gets a lot of flack for his method of storytelling because sometimes the way that he paints an unfinished picture. And he fills in missing pieces.
That's being diplomatic.
Yeah. Well, he fills in missing pieces by showing flashbacks, and he even tells someone else's story. And the main story will continue in the background sometimes. And he did that a lot with Lost. But I think that Lost kind of fell apart because he tried to wrap everything up. But in this, we don't really know if there's going to be a season two or not.
Right.
In this... He just stops telling the story, you know, so he doesn't have to wrap everything up because he can just end it. And and it works for his kind of storytelling. But
I have to say, I was not, you know, I have piled a lot of recriminations on Lindelof's shoulders over the, you know, since 2009 when Star Trek happened. This series makes me, I'm not going to retract everything because I think he still did some questionable things to some.
No, Prometheus is still unforgivable. I'm sorry.
I'm more upset about the fact that I dared to hope Prometheus would be good than the fact that it wasn't. But
actually, I haven't seen Prometheus.
I've never seen it. Yeah.
You don't need to.
It's the most beautiful failure I've ever seen.
Yeah. Ridley Scott can still paint a pretty picture, but it's not worth looking behind the canvas. And that's a metaphor for you, folks.
When this season wrapped, I almost took everything back I'd said about him as well, because when I saw his name initially, I was like, there's going to be a dumpster fire again. And to... tell those stories of those characters and have pretty much all of them be so completely arcing and wrapping up and a whole thing per character in one season so tightly, so well done. I was gobsmacked. I really was. One of the best seasons I've seen of anything for a while.
And then on top of that, not just, Matt, I'm sorry, that's the second time you tried. No, go for it.
I was just going to say, this is my favorite show I've ever seen. Like, hands down, this one season of television is I'll say the best. I don't know about my favorite. There are a few things that I have, like, just, like, a lot of love in my heart for. But, like, I think it is the best on-screen season of television, especially as a one-off season. It's just a great season of television.
I think maybe Lindelof tells stories better when it's just a short series. It's just... 9-10 episodes.
Yeah.
Because when he did Lost for 6 seasons and he did The Leftovers for 3 or 4 seasons or something like that, and he has to try and make it last that long and then wrap up everything, that's when it falls apart. So I almost want to say that if he comes back and does a season 2, it should not even be attached to this. It should be something like a completely different story without it being like
in
a
the
sequel
universe
to this.
But not connected.
Yeah. Maybe keep a couple of the characters, like obviously Angela, we want to find out what happened with her, you know, and maybe one or two other characters, and not try to make a continuing arc that's going to go for seasons and seasons, you know.
Well, the thing with Lindelof, like, the way that he tells stories, or he likes to tell stories, it seems, is to jump back and forth in time. So this was the perfect material for him, where that's built into the story, where all time exists at once.
Yeah.
So it was a really good match for the creator and the creation.
And one thing that we know for sure is that if they do make a second season of the show, he is not coming back.
Yeah.
He's already stated, he's made it clear, I had the story I wanted to tell, I told it, and that's what I came to do. And HBO wanted a second season, and he told them that if they want to make a second season, that's up to them, but he's not going to be the one to make it.
Yeah, and Regina King says that she's not going to come back if he doesn't come back.
I think he said if he has an idea, he'll come back. But he said he has no idea and he never planned to do a season two. But if an idea comes to him, he might come back and make it. And there's a history of that with HBO, like letting people kind of breeze in and out, make a season, leave for a while. Like Curb Your Enthusiasm has like 12 seasons over like 17 years or whatever. I don't even know. It's like they keep coming back and then leaving for a couple of years, then coming back. And
I'm fine with that because, you know, the British television does that a lot. You know, if you don't have a story to tell, then you don't have to come back the next season, and just because you're supposed to be there.
That's how you get filler.
Yeah.
When you have to come back year after year and you have to continue adding on to your story, you know, telling the meat of the story before you know what the ending is going to be, that's how you end up getting meandering television. That's how you end up getting lost.
Yeah.
And not like the verb getting lost, but the show Lost. Where,
well, in his defense, I believe it was him and the other creator that was on at that point. Around season three or four, they went to the network during Lost and they said,
"Abrams,
I think it was whoever had taken over, because Abrams wasn't really active anymore. It was Lindelof and Orsi. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it was Orsi.
Anyway, the two main showrunners went to the studio." NBC, I think it was.
ABC.
And said, ABC. That's right. And they said, look how bad these couple episodes are. That's what's going to keep happening if you don't let us set an end date. And they decided it was going to be six seasons. Around season four, they like made the deal. They're like, we need to have an end in mind. So at least he wanted to do that, but the studio system kind of like was kept pushing them to make more episodes.
He's like, yeah, because this show is like, it's staying so top. In the top of the ratings, you've got to keep making it for 20 years, you know. But so let's talk about some of these characters, these individual characters. Sister Knight, played by Regina King. Angela Abar, played by Regina King. What do you guys think of her? Boz, you haven't got a chance to say a whole lot. What do you think?
It's because I'm still getting that coffee down me. So it's only 4 a.m. It's fine. I do you know what? I wasn't sure where that was all going at first. And I think it probably took two episodes before I really sort of fell in love with that character. In terms of depth and bringing it to the screen, I thought she did such an amazing job. And I don't really know where to deep dive into the character. It's so complex how they weaved everything together. I'm trying to think at what point did she really become a thing. I don't know if someone can help me out with that one.
They did something very clever by not introducing the characters we knew about until like episodes 2 and 3.
Mm-hmm.
Like Dr. Manhattan doesn't come in for a while. Ozymandias is kind of there. What's her name?
Laurie Blake.
Laurie Blake. Laurie Blake doesn't show up, I think, until episode 3. I think that's
Silk
right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Silk Spectre. Mm, yeah. So what I think they did really cleverly was the first two episodes are about Angela, and you really have to like be because I think if they'd had those characters in those first two episodes, they would have overshadowed her. But she got to have her own thing for a while, and then you're like, you got invested. At least I did.
Yeah, but you would have instinctively gravitated towards Laurie and Adrian because they're the ones from the comics, so they must be the leads.
Right.
And then you wouldn't have attached yourself to Angela and to Looking Glass the way that you're supposed to.
Because she's leading everything at first, yet it was only really when everything started to unfold that I really fell in love with the character. Not that I didn't like her initially. Do you know what I mean? I think it was really well done how they strung that out. And then she's the linchpin of like everything, really.
Yeah.
It's also
some world building that they had to do because they, it's in the same world that we've seen before in the comics, but things have changed. And they wanted to make sure that they set that up before they started bringing in stuff that we already knew. I mean, they had to set up the fact that all of the cops wear masks now. And they had to set up that there's this white supremacist group that all dress like Rorschach, you know?
Yeah.
And even small stuff, like the fact that all of the vehicles are electric, you know, even though it looks like an old beater truck, it's an electric vehicle, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's because in the comics, they had invented, I think it was Ozymandias and Manhattan had invented that technology. They also, because in the PDpedia, if you're reading after the first episode, they talk about how because they created certain technologies and then because of the destruction of New York with the squid, they believed it was because of the technologies they were working on. So new technology advancement stopped. And so if you notice, there's no cell phones on the show.
I didn't notice that.
It's crazy.
People go to that booth to try and call Dr. Manhattan all the time.
Yeah.
Hey, Greg.
But there were so many bits like that. We're like, what? They left it.
Yeah.
Like, I liked that we didn't have stuff explained too early. And it was like, it must have been episode 3 or 4. And I was just like, okay, I'm just going with this now. Because I've got... And the point I realized who Jeremy Irons was playing, right. Now I'm getting a sense of where you might be going, where this sits, how it's going to unravel. And just the more we went into it, I did the grin on my face every episode. I got behind with it. So at one point I had 4 episodes and I think I sat down about 10 p.m. thought I was just going to watch an episode of Watchmen. I just binged what I had. I need the rest now.
That's how I started. I made a mistake. I started with 4 episodes that were backed up. So I went with episode 1 through episode 4 and then I had to wait till the next week. I was shot.
I was watching it from the beginning. I watched it from episode 1 and watched it weekly. And yeah, it was every episode when it was over, you're like, what? It's only been on for like 20 minutes. You know, nope. Yeah.
It was my wife doesn't binge, but you know, we watched the first episode, and I guess maybe because everybody had been saying how great it was, it wasn't that I didn't like it, but it was just like, all right, that was fine. And then we didn't go back for like a week and a half. And it wasn't, a conscious, well, that wasn't all that great, so let's not watch it. It was just, we just didn't. You know, we had other things to do and you know, got the kids and all that stuff. But then after episode 2, it was like we swallowed the hook and couldn't stop. And when we got to, how many episodes were there? 8?
9.
8 or 9?
9.
We the last night we watched it, we started it on episode 6. We watched episode 6, and I was like, you want to watch another one? And she's like, yeah, which one more isn't unusual for her. But we get to the end of 7, or, you know, whatever it was. We you know, had one more episode to go, and it was like 11 o'clock at night. And I'm like, another one? And she's like, yeah. And that is completely unheard of. And then when we get to the end of it, we're like, that was the last one? Damn. But she was stepping up. What happened? But actually, I would, if they never did another series, I would be totally cool with where that ended, because that was a beautiful question mark ending, you know? Yeah.
Very Inception. Yeah.
It's so brilliantly packaged, and it's so rare that you find that, especially with a first season. A single season, a show comes out, it opens up, it builds its own universe on its own 2 legs. It's so strong. This one had the added benefit of being based on the original 12-issue comic series. And every connection that they make going back to that comic is rock solid. Mm-hmm. And you get to the end of the season, and they have put together their finale knowing full well, we don't need to continue after this. We're going to write an ending that can stand on its own. It allows for the possibility of continuing, but it doesn't have to. And for it to be so well tied up at the end and be just one beautiful season of television that doesn't need more. It's so incredibly rare to find. And on top of that, even, it's a show that you can go back, you can rewatch this season and find so much. Mm. And you notice so much that you didn't beforehand. I was doing that because I did a rewatch over the past like week and a half, especially knowing how it turns out. Every scene with Adrian, knowing from the jump, when I start the season, knowing where he is and realizing, oh, every episode of this season is another year of his time there. Yeah. Knowing that.
Oh, yeah.
And I paid attention. I'm pretty sure that every episode there's
another candle.
You see the cake at least once, and there's another candle, which once you know what's going on, you can say, oh, so it's a year has gone by since we saw him last episode. And to follow that through, knowing that all the timing works out with when the satellite comes by to when he gets picked up by the ship to when he gets back to Earth, when he gets ungolded.
Yeah.
Everything just lines up so, so smoothly.
Yeah, I loved it. It was
a well-oiled machine.
Yeah, it was like episode 6 or 7 before we even find out that what's happening with him is not simultaneous with what's going on with the rest of the story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people may have figured it out. I didn't figure it out until they told me.
Look, I was watching, what the hell is, like, what is going on? Like, because it's just, I think that's some of the stuff that kept me hooked in, because it's like, what is he doing? And then when he has the performance and just fries the guy alive, like, what the?
Yeah. Yeah. And when they launch him in that with that catapult, and then he's all of a sudden he's out in space, I'm thinking he went through a wormhole or something. But no, yeah, he's just outside the gate. Yeah. I didn't realize. Well, he's been on another planet the whole time. Or he's been on, what was it, Europa?
Yep. Europa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The whole time.
I love Jeremy Irons in this.
Yeah.
They just went like totally took the reins off him and said, chew all of this scenery we're building for you. And when you're done, we'll build you some more to eat. And it was beautiful.
All right. I will forget. So I've got two things in my brain now, and that's all I can hold. One, going back to Boz, what you were saying when you first started, this show, you just like when you get hooked on the show, and Regina King's performance is, like you said, one of the best ever, because you see so many facets of her. Even in that first episode, you see the total badass, and you see the person who is like got this trauma, and you see the person who is caring, and like it's she nails it. She nails every aspect.
And when she's on that drug thing and she's experiencing that, her performance there was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Just my favorite episode.
Incredible.
And tying into what you guys are saying now, one of the best things about this show is it is the I don't know if you call it pacing, but the rate at which information is dropped, questions are asked, and answers are revealed. Because every, maybe, you know, they'll start you off and you're like, what the what the fuck was that? Like, that doesn't make any trip. We're doing trip. Like, especially if you don't know the comic. Like, okay, is that still a thing? And
why are the squids?
And this would be a good t-shirt, actually. Just why the squids?
It's raining squids.
Just squids in question mark. Squids.
No problem. So, like, there'll be a few. They'll put some what the F moment. And they'll give you like 2 or 3 episodes to kind of figure it out. And obviously, meanwhile, the other story is progressing. And like, so top two, what are the F moments? Or top three. The first episode, just various things in the first episode. Like, what is this? What is that? What does that mean? What does that mean? Him, I guess it wasn't so much of what the F, like the whole, his, Adrian's whole life was kind of it made its own kind of sense, but clearly you're like, okay, what does this have to do with the main story? And the scene where he goes to the lake and he just fishes out people. Just popped him in the microwave while he's eating his cake.
Yeah, that's what really freaked me out was when he put him in that centrifuge or whatever. Turn it on, they're in there screaming, and he's just sitting and having a piece of cake like it's nothing.
What?
And when he's just like picking them out of the lake and throwing some aside, like they're not a good one, not ripe yet. Like
exactly. Casually throw him back into the water, and it's
so weird.
You have to assume if he's doing that, then they exist in that lake. But still, the visual of just throwing a baby into the
lake—such
casual disregard for life—that's an odd visual to see. You'd have him put him in the chamber, and you hear the babies wailing all the way up to grown adults screaming.
One of my favorite things,
also disturbing,
in any like when you world build. Without explanation, without explicit explanation, but it makes sense so that any person who's paying attention can, that's that. Like the electric car. It's like, I guess they're doing that. That makes sense. I can't think of other examples from other shows because it's late. But yeah, like when they just do a thing and they don't tell you why they're doing the thing, because if you were actually in that world, you wouldn't explain, I'm not putting food in a microwave and I'm pushing the button because that's what heats up my food. I know, you just do it.
Yeah. This is
the point, you're familiar with this practice, of course, but this is the point where I open up the drawer and I put this dog in the drawer and I close it and I push the button to incinerate the dog, for it is unnecessary. They don't explain that. You just see that happen. They don't say this is a cloning facility where we make new pets. Huh. No, they just, it's clear. You just see what's happening. You put it together.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, actually, it's that whole show don't tell kind of thing. You get a lot of stories that feel like they have to drop exposition into stories, and a guy will be talking to his wife, who obviously knows him, and he'll say, "Well, as you know, I grew up in an orphanage." It's like, yeah, you don't have to tell me.
I hate that stuff. And I love the blue telephone boxes and how long they leave it, and you're like, what is the significance of these blue telephone boxes? There isn't one.
Yeah.
Well,
there is a little bit.
There is. Actually, I haven't watched it since I initially watched it. I didn't do a rewatch for this show, although I love it. I just hadn't had time.
But. Same here. The significance, I mean, it was introducing the idea of Lori Blake and that. But the significance eventually, though, was that Lady True owns all of those, and she was basically using them because people are basically using them to pray to Dr. Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And she's basically just collecting all their prayers for the data mining.
Right.
And that's how she knows a lot of what's going on.
And I loved Jean Smart as Lori Blake, an older version of Lori Blake.
Yes.
Of course, she's great in everything I've ever seen her in. You know, she's just a tough old broad, you know. She was great in, I used to love her in Designing Women, but you know, she's been in tons of stuff since. And she was in Fargo a couple of seasons back. And then I thought she did a good job in this too.
She absolutely nailed it. Pulled off the character brilliantly, and let us know without a lot of explicit exposition, but just through her performance, gave us everything we needed to know about what has happened to the character since the original comic.
Hmm.
All the way up through her having a pet owl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
it's so brilliant. Good. And my favorite. Yeah, I was just going there. My favorite one-off image. They don't explain it. They don't give you any insight. It's just she opens up this case, and there's this great big branded Dr. Manhattan sex toy with a movie in it that's a parody of her own relationship.
Yes.
Did you know that particular item has a name, a brand name?
No.
It's apparently called the Excalibur.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's probably available in real life.
In the PDpedia, they do have a little bit of weird world building in the PDpedia about that. One of the things that PD collects is a a blueprint of that device, of the Excalibur. And
That's what I saw.
Yeah. It's branded, like the company that made it is the company that her boyfriend, the owl, whatever Dan. It is, uh-huh. Dan Dreiberg, the company that Dan owns made that. So like real weird, her new boyfriend made a sex toy based on her old boyfriend. And then she uses it. It's real strange.
Yeah. And not only that, but she uses that with a movie that is parodying her own life. And
yeah,
at the same moment, it's to us as the viewer, it's hilarious
mm-hmm.
that Dr. Manhattan has a sex toy made after him and that she's about to use it. And it's also incredibly sad.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
In conjunction with her in the Dr. Manhattan phone box and trying to tell him a joke. I mean, yeah, she was with Dan, and yet clearly Dan is in prison these days. And now she's working for the Fed, so who knows where that relationship is. But it becomes painfully obvious that she's still in love with Dr. Manhattan and has never stopped feeling that way. But now she's trapped with both of her relationships out of her reach, and she's just stuck fighting against what she used to be. So many layers to the character. It's a show so fucking good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's like one of the primary things we saw about the heroes in the original comic and in the movie was how they're what's the right word? There's got to be a better term than fucked up, but I can't think of one. How their sex drives were tied into their aggression and their like that wonderful scene in the movie. I can't remember if it came out of the comic or not, where Silk Spectre and Night Owl couldn't get off with each other unless they had just finished beating up a bunch of bad guys.
Yeah,
and totally. I remember people objecting to that scene. They were like, oh, that was gratuitous. I was like, no, you're completely missing the point of that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that was that was one of the parts of the movie that was very accurate to the comic. They did have the scene where they tried to be with each other in the apartment, and Dan couldn't perform.
Yeah.
Because it was the existential dread of everything that was going on and him feeling powerless. It extended to that as well. Then they put on their suits again. They went out and they did some heroing. They, they saved people from a fire and all that. And that helped them both to feel alive again. And then they were able to do that. I think it might've been a little bit on the nose with the, I think they did this in the comic book as well with the accidentally hitting the flamethrower button on the airship.
Yeah.
At just that particular moment.
Yeah.
It's a little bit heavy handed.
It was definitely in the comic book. I remember that panel.
Yeah.
Going back to
it lines up with Zack Snyder, creator of Sucker Punch.
Yeah.
So I suppose.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Buzz.
I was like going back to the Silk Spectre character later on and how she sort of renounced the costume side of it. And now she's doing the exact opposite, hunting down masked vigilantes and so on. I did see a sort of an analysis of her character that said that finding out her dad was a comedian and how she almost becomes like him in that portion of her life. She's about the guns and the, just being violent, basically. So she's sort of gone from what her mother wanted for her to being like her father was. And then sort of by the end of all this, she sort of comes full circle again. Again, just a full character arc. And I didn't pick up on that. I like it when these people sit down and nerd out and put it on a YouTube video for us. Cause sometimes I do need that shit explained, but, I was like, oh yes, that's really good.
Well, I think Angela kind of went through the same sort of arc when she found out that her grandfather was the, what did he call himself?
Hooded Justice.
Hooded Justice, yeah.
And I thought that was a brilliant turn. Especially, taking it from the comic where it was clear from the art that was a white guy in the comic book.
Mm. Yep.
But one of the cleverest examples of subverting expectations was to say, and this guy was Hooded Justice, and he put on makeup to make it, he put on white face under his hood. So people wouldn't know who he really was. But in fact, this was the guy. And that was not hinted at all in the comic book. The closest we got, they even paid mention of it in in the series where people thought that it was a Russian, was it wrestler, circus performer?
Yeah, circus performer, wrestler.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lindelof talks about that, and he talks about the fact that he chose, he looked, he scoured the books. They'd actually asked him to do this series before, but he'd never found a way in. And then he'd look through the books for, like, what is the story that's missing? And he realized in the books, every one of the other original Watchmen, or the Minutemen, I think they're called in that, at that era, knew each other's names, but they only ever called Hooded Justice HJ. And you never see him without his hood. He's the only character who's this mysterious character. And he started thinking, like, why would that character in the 50s not reveal his identity to even his friends, his partners? And that's when he, like, that's when that idea came to him. And then he, and then all of the stuff about racial justice and Tulsa and all that stuff, like, was born of that idea of that missing identity of the Hooded Justice.
Mm-hmm. You see, for me, I excuse my ignorance, but obviously being over here and whatever, I knew nothing about Tulsa until I saw this.
Me neither.
You're not alone.
I had heard that there was a riot in Tulsa, but I did not. And I know, you know, in television they can, you know, they can expand on things and everything. But I went back and looked at the history after I saw the episode, and it really was, there was a very big riot in Tulsa at that time. Yeah. I didn't realize it was as big as it was.
I would take objection to the term riot.
It wasn't. Yeah,
it was a massacre.
It was a massacre.
It's the only example of Americans bombing other Americans from the air. It's the only time that's ever happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why I thought it was. That's why I initially, on seeing it, I thought it was a fictionalization. Like, you know, they play with, it's close to what reality was, and history. Yeah. And I thought they were changing stuff again. I had to go and look, and I thought, fucking hell, unbelievable.
Like I said, I knew.
And then of course it all flares up recently, and I'm like, oh well,
yeah.
Timing off.
I wonder if that would have happened if it weren't for Watchmen. I wonder how many people would have. I wonder if the people who, like, planned that rally would have known about it if it hadn't been for Watchmen. I think Watchmen, like, made that known to white America, basically.
Yeah, like I said, I knew that something had happened in Tulsa, but I didn't know about the bombing and all that kind of stuff. So I thought that since this was an alternate timeline, an alternate history, that they were making it bigger than it really than what really happened. Until you go back and then read the history, and then you find it. No, it's pretty spot on what happened.
You guys want me to get really nerdy with the timeline stuff?
Sure.
Go.
I'm really interested in the alternate history part of this, and, like, I really love talking about time travel and splitting timelines and all that kind of stuff. And if you read all the PDpedia, you find out the movie he's watching at the beginning of the film, or the season, Boss, whatever, Bass Reeves. Thank you. I'm so bad at remembering certain details, but Bass Reeves is. The guy who directed that movie was a real director who directed a bunch of other movies, but that movie was fake. And that movie goes on to inspire Hooded Justice. Mm-hmm. So if you connect that, like, that's the earliest nugget of a difference we have.
But the character in that movie was a real, I mean, that movie was about a real person.
Yes, yes, yes.
And it was a real director, but that actual movie never existed.
The actual movie didn't exist. So that's the earliest difference we have in the Watchmen universe from our own, is this film. And then William grows up to be Hooded Justice, and he inspires all the other heroes. So it is possible that that existence of that movie is what branches the timelines. I really like that.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about Dr. Manhattan. I'm not going to try to pronounce the actor's name. If someone else wants to try, go for it. But
if I had it in front of me, I might, but yeah. I don't.
it's like Yahya Abdul-Mateen II or something like that. So I guess I lied. I am going to try to pronounce it. and he plays Cal, Dr. Manhattan. For one thing, from a looks aspect, Dr. Manhattan looks a lot different than he did in the Zack Snyder movie. They didn't try to make Dr. Manhattan, like, glow all the time. You know, like, the Dr. Manhattan in the movie was glowing all the time, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's certain times he was just blue. He's just a blue dude. That, for some reason, they felt like they had to show his dick a lot. Like,
that's canon.
Yeah, well, yeah.
If you're that, why would you care?
Yeah, if my dick was that big, I'd probably show it off too.
but again, that's kind of one of the reason for it isn't just, you know, let's put a big blue schlong on the screen. It's the fact that, like John just said, Dr. Manhattan has gotten to a point where he no longer connects to people.
Mm.
And so he's like, I'm naked. Oh, who cares? And it's, you know, when the movie came out, everybody was constantly bitching about Manhattan's penis. It was either, you know, either commenting on it or going, did we have to see that much blue dick? You know, how many
times? In over 2 hours. It's not even that much. I thought it was going to be in my face the whole time. I didn't even notice, actually.
If there was breasts, no one would be complaining. Let's be honest.
Exactly.
There were breasts in that movie, and no one was complaining about it.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
I sure wasn't. The only time the dick bothered me, and this is so stupid, but I've been holding on to this comment for like 2 months now. At the very end, I can't think of her name now. Regina King's character, Angela is like Manhattan's about to be disintegrated, and she's on the ground in front of him. And there's like no way to avoid the fact that, you know, getting a close up of her face, his dick is going to be right behind her head. Yeah. For some reason, they decided to stop being anatomically correct, and it looked like a damn polygon, you know, and an unfinished polygon rendering. And it was just like a rectangle with a triangle on top of it. And it was more bothersome to me that it wasn't realistic than that it was there. If it had just been there, I would have just went, all right, that's, you know, that's, it wouldn't have, it pulled me out.
I didn't notice, but
I'm
not disputing you. I'm just, I don't know.
No, I'm not, I would have been surprised if any of y'all had noticed it, but it's been bugging the crap out of me.
You say about his sort of disconnectedness from human beings. And of course that's his whole story arc in this one, which sort of humanizes him. Well, it does.
Yeah.
Completely.
Literally.
But he literally gets to experience like what it really is to love someone. And he just, and you get this kind of savior moment at the end then. But it's all, what is the line? I'm experiencing every moment together all at once right now or something. Like yeah. That's,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's our role in
every moment that we were together all at once.
Mm.
And it's possible that I rolled a tear when I saw that episode for the first time.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, and that was his whole arc in the comic, was that he was becoming less and less human.
Mm-hmm.
To the point that he took, was it Laurie or was it her mother that he took to Mars with him, and he didn't even realize that she was suffocating.
You might need some oxygen.
Yeah.
can I just
every character, I won't say you like them in this show, but I kind of like every, even the complete assholes are kind of charming or at least interesting. And the characters that you think you'll hate are so well written. Like Adrian's a complete asshole. He's just, I don't know, sociopath is the right word, but kind of.
Oh, for sure. Narcissist.
But yes. The embodiment of narcissism. But he's still kind of like, you still kind of like him. Like, maybe it's because everyone has a plan, and the people who don't have a plan are trying to figure out the plan. Like, however they did it, every single character is a character that I was happy to see on the screen. Yeah, like, there wasn't any part as they were jumping between, and this happened, you know, this happened with Game of Thrones, this happened with other shows that are huge ensemble casts. Oh, this is a part of the show where we got to follow up on their storyline. Okay, fine. And we'll slog through it for 5 or 10 minutes. And okay, now back to the story I really care about. But it wasn't any part like that. I wanted to know every part of everyone's story.
There was no Bran in this season.
Yeah. Well, I was worried that it was going to be Glass, actually, because he wasn't gelling with me. And I'm beginning to think it was just a personal prejudice, because I just found that when he put that silver thing over his head, that he just had a really weird shaped head, and it just kind of really put me off.
But I love this character.
When we get to his story and Squid Day,
I love
it. Oh, that was superb.
Love you so much.
So, just
yeah.
Even the ones I thought I didn't care about, by the end of that season, they just pulled it straight back round, and it's just like, yep, they're all.
I liked him before that because he was one of the characters where, okay, he's got a thick accent, or you think, oh, I've seen this character 100 times, but you haven't. You don't know this character at all.
Tim Blake Nelson.
Kind of surprising.
Yeah. Tim Blake Nelson, I've always liked him because, I mean, he pretty much talks like that's the way he pretty much talks.
I've never seen him not do that.
Yeah. You know, and
he didn't do that in The Incredible Hulk.
He's done it in just about everything I've ever seen him in. He talks. If he doesn't speak like that in real life, he's known a lot of people that do because the part of the country that I live in, I could throw a rock and hit somebody that talks exactly like that.
I don't remember him in the Hulk either. Who was he?
He was I can't remember the character's name, but Dr. I think Samuel something. By the end of the film, they were setting
him up. The leader.
The leader.
Yeah, they're setting him up. Okay, remember. I remember that was him. That's cool.
Yeah, I've gotten that. Yeah.
One of my favorite things about Watchmen, and I know we're getting close to an hour, I just want to mention it before, the music is used more effectively in the show than I've ever seen music used.
Mm-hmm.
The way that they not only set mood with music, but like the concepts of the song tie together with every scene so well. When they're telling William's story through Angela's flashbacks after she's taken that drug, and the song The Way Things Used to Be comes on, and it's like this nostalgic song for the past, but he's going through this horrible racism, and it's just superbly done. And my favorite of the entire thing is Every Time You Go Away, mm-hmm. by Hall and Oates plays while her grandmother dies, and it's like her hope, but it's also her experiencing it as William, because now she has all of William's memories of her as well. And so it's like her losing her grandmother, who was hope to her, but also losing the woman she has now grown to know as her wife through these memories.
Mm-hmm.
And she watches her die, and it's just, oh man. And Every Time You Go Away comes on, and it's the best use of music I think I've ever seen in anything. So good.
I think all the songs and all the music in the cafe Dr. Manhattan episode all have blue in the title, or like it's.
Oh dear! Yeah. I didn't spot that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Before we end, I want to talk about the ending, and what we think happened, and if they have a season two, what do you think will happen? Angela found an egg in the refrigerator. All the other eggs were broken. And there was one egg that wasn't. She ate that egg. And, you know, we had that whole thing in the cafe earlier where Dr. Manhattan said that he could put his power into an object like this egg. And then if someone ate it, then possibly they would be able to do what he could do or whatever. And then we see her step off like she's going to step onto the pool and possibly walk on it. And then we cut the credits. So
I think she's alone. She can't. We find out she can't swim. And no,
I personally think that if a season two were to come, it would be like 5 years later or something like that, and we wouldn't find out until mid-season if it happened or not. You know,
I think if they make a season soon, the season opens with her falling directly in the pool, but over the course of the season, her powers get revealed. That's how I think they would play it.
Mm, yeah, probably.
So you think she doesn't have them, and then they start to emerge or something like that.
I think you're both right. I think if they do it, like the first couple of episodes, you would just see her. When you see her, if you see her, it would be it's like some unrelated story. And then, you know, episode like three, like somebody that these characters that we now know from the first two episodes are in some dire situation. And new Dr. Manhattan appears, and she's fully realized. But like you say, it'll be years later. And initially, she fell in the pool, and it takes time for her powers to emerge. This may be an unpopular opinion. I'm not going to say I didn't like the ending, because I did like the ending. But I think, and I'm fine with the ambiguity of it, but I would have preferred it, I think, if they had cut it sooner. If they, instead of having her foot hover over the water, if they cut it after she found the egg, or even after she'd just eaten the egg and closed her eyes and opened her eyes. It's, you still don't know if it worked. You still, like, it's the same point, but I feel like it was an unnecessary, because that after she eats the egg to the point she puts her foot on the water is, you know, like 2 minutes, give or take.
Yeah.
And I feel like it was only stretching it out so that you could stop before she puts her foot on the water. And that to me is, I like, you're better than that at this point. Like there's no reason to do that. If you just want us to not know if she does it or not, stop it at a point that's more of a natural ending.
He wanted the spinning top from the end of Inception. I'm telling you, that's what he's going for.
I think he really wanted that visual of her, and that visual is in my mind. I don't know if her having eaten an egg is in my mind, but the like question of whether she can walk on water is like indelibly burned
because
in my
brain. That was the last scene. If she had eaten the egg and then looked at the camera, that would be in your mind.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe.
I think if they did do another series, that, like, because we have generations of masked vigilantes, do you think they do the forming of the next Minuteman, Watchman, the Relockman would could be the next one? I don't know, like, just a new big bad comes up and people start to put masks on and get one. We've already got police wearing masks, maybe get a splinter group there. I don't know, that could be an interesting.
Yeah, the possibility of forming the next generation of heroes, I think, is a possible direction they could go. If they're going to tell another story in the universe that is not necessarily a continuation of the main plot of this season, I think they need to pick a few threads that were not explored much at all from this first season, expand on that in the second season, and try to leave as much of the main plot from season one either in the past or in the background. Like, so for example, the big question is whether or not Angela was given the powers of Dr. Manhattan. I tend to believe that she did get his powers from that egg. So they can just have mentions in the background of news reports that, you know, is Dr. Manhattan returned? And, you know, people don't know who it really is. And we just see reports that, oh, there's apparently a Dr. Manhattan type figure that's out in the world doing stuff. Mm-hmm. But that's not what we're focusing on this season. We had enough focus on Dr. Manhattan last season. We don't need to do it again. However, there was a few mentions of Dan Dreiberg in the first season. I would love to see what they do with that character.
Who's that?
Let's focus on his time in prison and whether or not he's going to get out. Night Owl. Yeah. Let's focus on Adrian Veidt being declared not dead and also being very under arrest for the murder of a whole bunch of people.
30 million.
Let's look at his, you know, he had that pig trial on Europa. Now let's have a real trial. Yeah. Let's see what happens with that.
Rick, what about you?
You know, the only thing that I don't know what I would want to see. I honestly, the only thing about this series that didn't really work for me was how traditional Lady True ended up being as just a comic book villain, and how her final plot was just kind of unraveled and defeated. And it wasn't that it was bad. It's just the rest of the show was so left turn from what you expect from this kind of show, to have the villain be so normal kind of villainous. It was jarring to me. And I don't know that I could say how to fix that, but
I couldn't disagree more about Lady True, because I don't think she's a villain. I don't think she ever does anything wrong. And that's what I find fascinating from a moral perspective about this show is when Veidt, when he comes back to like take her down, he's assuming she will use the powers the way he would use the powers to control people. But all she says she wants to do is do good things. Like, she wants the powers to destroy our nuclear arsenal, and she wants to do all this good stuff. And they just all assume that her getting the powers would be bad. And it's kind of, to me, that's part of his narcissism. And I don't know that Angela having the powers is necessarily any better than Lady True. We never really see her do anything wrong. She's someone who's been wronged and wants to put the world right. And I don't think she's a standard villain at all.
I would. That's an interesting.
I hadn't thought of it that way, but yeah.
Because her whole idea, the way that she's going to get the powers is by killing Dr. Manhattan. You know,
because she didn't know about the egg. That's not her fault.
Yeah,
true. She's saying like,
told her about the egg.
Sorry,
go ahead, Matt.
Oh, I'm sorry. I felt like I was stepping on him. She just wants that power though, and thinks he's not doing enough with it. So yes, she's willing to make that like, your life is not worth the lives I could save with your power kind of a trade.
They're way too good.
Yeah. Plus, I'm going to destroy your whole wing of white supremacists. So, you know, that's a plus.
So, yeah, she really made a good trade there, I think.
Yeah.
One good life for a lot of shitty ones.
Yeah. And I would say, I don't know if this qualifies, Rick, but I would say the left turn, you know, you kind of presume that she's, you know, the puppet master behind all this, but you don't really know until the end. Like, the villain is the corrupt politician. And so I would say the non-standard twist would be that in a series of I don't know what's coming, the thing that you expect, you're no longer expecting, which is when they give you the thing that you expect after you're not expecting it. So it still qualifies.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I said I don't really have a solution for it. I mean, there has to be a final conflict. You know, otherwise people are, you can't go color too far out of the lines and be commercially successful. I felt her, the resolution of her story felt so quote unquote normal compared to the rest of the series.
Yeah. I think this is a good place to stop. One thing that I did want to add before I usually try to bring some facts. The only one that I'll share is that this is the second attempt at making a Watchmen TV series. Terry Gilliam was going to make one in the early 90s.
Well, that's all you have to say.
Yeah. He actually did cast. He actually did cast it. It was going to have Robin Williams as Rorschach, Jamie Lee Curtis as Silk Spectre, Gary Busey as the comedian, and Kevin Costner as Night Owl. It dissolved because HBO failed to provide a large enough budget for his vision, and he later claimed himself that it would have been unfilmable. So yeah. I don't know what it was going to be, but you know, there you go.
I like Watchmen, no.
All right, so let's go around the circle and everybody plug your thing, Matt.
Plug my thing, okay. Strandedpanda.com has all my stuff, music and all my podcasts and video stuff and all that, all those things. So check it out.
Scott, when you reach the bottom,
you can find me on Twitter at Prime Direct Pod. That's a Twitter account for my podcast right here on the Cosmic Potato Network, Prime Direction. You can find me on Twitter at Fleet Admiral UFP. For my personal Twitter account, usually with a lot of Star Trek stuff, but I don't say much on there these days, so don't get your hopes up. On Facebook, you can find the Prime Direction Facebook group, as well as the group for my graphic art business, Planet Rise Creative, also on Twitter at Planet Rise, or at my website, www.planetrisecreative.com.
And I was going to see, are you hosting any panels tomorrow?
No, I'm on several. I'm hosting none. No, okay. Yes, I am. That's wrong. I'm hosting a panel tomorrow morning at 9:45 a.m. Eastern time. I will be hosting a special live Prime Direction where we will discuss the role that the Star Trek franchise has played in people's lives during this year of the multiple dumpster fires, where everything is going wrong.
What do you mean?
The world is horrible.
2020 has been great.
You see my costume? I mean, come on. And
in these times, I refuse to say these unprecedented times or these trying times, that those phrases no longer mean
difficult times, yeah.
I am so sick of the word unprecedented. It's like, yeah. I never want to hear it again.
Right. but during this year, considering
everything is fine. Everything is great.
Considering the kind of year that it's been, a lot of people who find Star Trek to be very important to them have been turning to Star Trek as a source of comfort, as a source of familiarity, as a source of stability. So we're going to have a discussion about that, about how it has been helping people and about how it could help people. Anyone that wants to join the conversation, there's still plenty of slots open. So reach out, get in touch, and we'll kick that off tomorrow morning.
One day this virus is like magic. The virus is just going to disappear. It's going to be gone. It's going to be like magic.
If you stop testing, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, don't get me started.
Stop testing and the virus goes away. Just stop testing. All the testing is making us look bad. If you stop looking at a fire, it doesn't stop burning. Rick, go ahead.
You can find all my stuff at that's your network. I'm sorry, guys. It's a really, really rough day.
It's past his bedtime.
You can find me at starbasecommand.net. You can find Starbase 66 and Open the Iris and Analyzing Doctor Who and Infinite Diversity and a couple other shows when I finally get around to releasing them. Also, tomorrow, Saturday, the 27th of June, at 12:30 Eastern, 12:30 Central, 1:30 Eastern, excuse me, we will be doing a live Starbase 66, where we will be discussing Gene Roddenberry's vision and all the implications thereof. So tune in.
All right. And John?
I am the host of Captain Game Show. I'm not hosting anything tomorrow, but I am scheduled to appear on something, I think.
You're going
to
be not. On my actually.
Aren't you going to Captain Game Show tomorrow?
No, there's not.
Oh, that's Sunday.
Sunday. That's Sunday. Okay.
You're going to be on actually. You're going to be on movies based on Stephen King stories, and we're playing Cards Against Humanity.
You're interrupting me.
If you want to be on it.
I got to say it.
Okay.
I don't know. I literally just pulled it up. So all the things that he said. I'm sorry, I didn't know. It's the caffeine. So you can find me on there's a Captain Game Show Facebook page. I'm also on Twitter and Instagram. And those are probably also in the order of which I maintain my social media. So I pay most attention to Facebook. And after that, Twitter, and I'm trying to be better about it, but new episodes pretty much every week. Also, I didn't mention it during the last episode that I released or during the live show, but every year there is a hidden game. So in addition to the standard questions and the standard rounds on every episode of Captain Game Show, there is a little clue, a little breadcrumb. Sometimes audio, sometimes visual. First year was visual. Last year was audio. This year, it is not audio.
It's tactile.
So if you can unravel the clues, I think the last one should end up being released probably around the end of the year, if I time it right. I'm a little bit behind, so. But after all the clues have been collected, you answer the question, you will win a prize at the end of the year. So if anyone cares to invest that much time and or effort, I welcome you.
That's right. Boz?
Everything I said at the beginning, plus I am hosting a panel tomorrow because I sort of badgered Sean to within an inch of his life. Have you got a horror panel? You need a horror panel. Anyway, so it's worked out really strangely. I was looking at who I could get on and so on. First off, my regular co-hosts are complete shrinky dicks and will not get on camera. So basically, of a three-man team, I'm left there on my own. So I've had to improvise. But what happened is I found out that my good friend Mitch Harrod from the Soho Horror Festival, which is normally in November in London, he's been doing lockdown festivals and getting films from distributors, putting on private screening links, and we all have like a Facebook chat together, and then it goes, right, here's a link, and then we go off and watch a movie. That's all happening this weekend. And I was like, no, a clash. But we've managed to marry it quite nicely because complete fluke, the actor who I asked primarily to come on the show and help me host happens to be in one of the movies that's world premiering at that event, and it's happening directly after our time slot for the Little Pot of Horrors panel. So that's Natalie, her co-star Derek, and then towards the end of the show, we hopefully, depending on scheduling, we'll have the director Charlie Steeds joining us as well. And stepping into the co-host spot is my good friend Paddy Murphy, who's also a film director, who did a film called The Perished last year, which is come out to great acclaim, and you should definitely look that up. I think it's available on Blu-ray and so on. But he is great fun. And so we will be chairing, and then we'll be talking all things vampire, because the film is Vampire Virus. So there you go. This could be interesting.
And I am hosting tomorrow at 4:15 Central. I'm doing Actually, which is a game show that I do at at every convention that I go to. I might be somebody.
Did you do that at a Play On Con?
No.
Okay.
No, I did it at Magic City Con, and I do it at the Sci-Fi Fantasy Festival every year. And then I may be on the Star Wars panel tomorrow. I wasn't planning to, but they're trying to get me to do it, so I might. And then
you're going to be on the Starbase.
Now I'm going to be on the Starbase, and then. Movies based on Stephen King stories. We're going to do that tomorrow night at 7. And then at 8:30, this is the announcement I wanted to make. We were going to screen a movie called Surf Nazis Must Die, because I was trying to find a movie that I thought was going to be like really bad and easy to make fun of and just have a good time watching it. And then I watched it, and it is all of those things, but there's also a lot of racial slurs. Imagine that in a movie that has Nazis in the title. But and with all the stuff that's going on in the country right now, I decided, hey, we're going to watch something else. So we're going to watch the 1990 movie Captain America instead.
Still Nazis, not as funny.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you could just do Ghost Shark. That's a really good one.
Be sure you like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter, or send us a voicemail or text message to 205-642-8380. Help the show grow by giving us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Thank you for joining us for Cosmic Potato, the Super Fan Talk podcast.